Hello there, you're listening to episode 65 of Good Copy, Bad Copy, the B2B copywriting podcast. My name's David Maguire, I'm creative director at Radix Communications, and sitting across the desk is our founder and our lead copywriter, Fiona Campbell-Howes.
Hello.
Hi, Fiona, how are you doing?
I'm all right, thank you. It says here that we're now going to have some top banter, hopefully.
Okay, great. That's top banter, that really
is. I feel an extreme amount of pressure now to produce top banter.
Yeah, hashtag accidental partridge. Yeah. Now I'm smashing the table. Oh well, this episode we'll be talking about two things copywriters absolutely dread: receiving feedback and proofing your work. And later, Katie makes her nomination for the Radix B2B Content Hall of Fame, and it is a corker. As ever, if you have any questions or comments about anything in this episode, we want to hear them. You can send us an email or a voice memo to podcast@radix-communications.com or tweet us at radixcom. That's RADIXCOM. In a bit, Fiona will give us her tips for handling feedback without smashing up your laptop. But first, proofreading. If you are anything like me, you always have this nagging feeling that however much you check your work, there's always a typo lurking in there waiting to catch you out. So I talked to professional proofreader Lorraine Williams to pick up some tips and to find out just what is the difference between proofing and copy editing and proof editing. I'm joined by Lorraine Williams from Lighthouse Proofreading. Hi, Lorraine. Thanks for finding the time to come in all the way from distant Penryn.
From round the corner. Yes. Thanks for having me.
Well, no. Thank you for making the journey. So, how long have you been professionally proofreading?
Professionally as Lighthouse Proofreading for the last year. In previous jobs in house, a few years before that. Then really since I was a teenager old enough to annoy the people sat next to me at school with my notes.
And does that just kind of come from like a natural love of grammar pedantry and punctuation?
It is, yeah. And I see the detail. And when you know you can make things more succinct and so they're easier to read, they're more clear, why not just leave a comment on that 15-year-old kid's work that's next to you? And you're meant to swap work. I vividly remember being at school and we were in English. You had to swap your work and I was like scribbling, making notes, making it helpful, handed it back and he was like, oh, it's fine. I'm sure it's not. I'm sure there's more I could do. Is there nothing to comment? And he just kind of looked at his. And you know when you see someone just get, their heart slightly broke at the same time as building anger. And I was like, oh, that's not what he wanted. It was what I wanted and I gave it to you. Yeah. It's a fine balance.
Do you have many friends?
No. That's why I'm here. I thought if people heard me, they might like me and it would grow.
Let's move swiftly on.
Yeah, it's probably best. Maybe don't.
So you've been doing a Lighthouse proofreading for a year. So who do you find yourself generally working with? Where does the work come from? Is it writers, designers, marketers who like their own writing so they don't want a copywriter to do it, they do it themselves and then get it proofread?
It's all of those actually.
Okay.
So it tends to be a combination of copywriters, copywriting agencies and marketing agencies, and then on the other end, smaller businesses who are either writing website content or rewriting the website content. Mm-hmm. So you've got the copywriters and marketeers who they know what they want to have done, they've achieved it, and they just want that kind of final sign off that everything's a-okay. And then at the other end, the other businesses, they tend to need someone to come in, kind of take what they've got the idea, and they are pulling it together, and they need me to kind of come in and copy edit that.
Cool. So, as a copywriter, definitely I'm not a proofreader. And people like go, oh, could you check this? And I'm checking it for ideas and things. And I'm, you know, missing the apostrophe errors and whatever else. So what is it that sets a copywriter and a proofreader apart? You know, what is it that makes you especially good at this stuff where a writer might not be? And is it something a writer could learn or is it just a natural flair?
I think if you have the love of language and the eye for detail of the language and how it's used, then a writer could definitely do it. But I do also think that writers, like you say you have, they've got the ideas, they want to take you on a story, there's a purpose for what you're talking about, and they want to lead the reader through that. If you've got all those ideas and you're trying to proofread something, you're going to get distracted. I don't have that big picture point of view. I very much come from looking at the small detail. So I think there are people that can do both, and if you can switch your head, that's amazing. I can't. I don't write. I can write, but I don't. I love taking what someone else has done and tweaking it to make it better. So whether that's the copy editing and you're tweaking to pull something together so it reads more succinctly, it's more appropriate to the audience, or whether it's more that someone like yourself might just want me to check that there's no squiffy bits of grammar or Z's or missing apostrophes or double spaces. I love finding double spaces. They just stand out. Spiders and double spaces, I see them everywhere.
It's a thing that I do in a when I do a sort of a test for people to see what their, you know, attention to detail is like, and the double space is the one that they always miss.
I think as well, I don't know about other people, but for me, I think I see words as how they're spelled and how grammar should be used and all the English side of things, but I think I see the shapes. So you can usually tell if you're just skimming over something, I can tell when something's spelt wrong because I see the shapes not right, even before I've properly read it. So I think that's why the double spaces tend to stand out, because there's more white space than there should be. So it's a visual thing as well as an English thing, which is probably what helps.
Mm. So you do proofing. By the sound of it, you do copy editing as well. And is that something where you charge like a different rate for those, depending on what the client asks you for, or just you allow more time for one than the other? Where do you draw the line between the two?
It's really blurry.
It really is, isn't it?
It's really hard as well. And even when I think I know how I want to separate my services, a client will come in with something and I usually ask for a sample of what they want me to work on. And I'll think, is it more this, is it more that? And then I'll look at what the Society for Editors and Proofreaders define it as. I always end up double checking and I'm like, no, they're still saying it's quite blurry. So it very much depends on what the client wants, what they can afford, or their time scale. So if someone says they wanted something copy editing, they want to pull it together, make it tighter, make it more streamlined, more efficient to the reader, but they need it turned around really quickly, I can't do that. So I could definitely do the proofreading. I've also got the hybrid of proof editing.
Oh.
I know. And it does exist. It's not just me.
You didn't invent it.
It's not me. It does exist.
Proof editing. Tell us about proof editing.
It's for my sanity. It is. So how I've defined it is you have the proof reading, which is looking for the accuracy, the spelling, the grammar, the punctuation, to make sure everything is right. The copy editing always makes sure everything's right as well, but you tend to get more involved. You're looking at the style, the tone, the language used, whether it's appropriate for the audience. Some people, and it tends to be not the copywriters and the marketing experts, it tends to be more the people who've written their own and their own website content or their own brochure or guide, and they're like, can you proofread it or copy edit it? And I look at it and I think, it needs a bit more of one or a bit less of the other, and it's kind of that hybrid. So they get exactly what they need, but it's not too far one way. It's a strange halfway house, but I find it gives me the option to know what I'm working towards, and it's more helpful for the client as well.
Do they need to know what they're getting, or to them is it just better?
I've never thought about that. In my head, I try and define it. I think because when you love working on stuff and tinkering to improve things, you'll just keep on going and going, and that's not ideal. It's not what people want. It's not what people want to pay for. So if I've set myself the boundaries of what each service entails, at least I know what I'm working towards because that client signed it off. So maybe they don't need to know, but I want them to know. I want them to know what it is I'm looking for. I don't want them to come back and be like, oh, you didn't look at blah. And I'm like, oh, but we didn't talk about blah. Damn it. Blah was the other option. So if I give them all three, they can get an idea of what they're going to get from me for their money in that time scale. And also, it's not all about writing and language skill necessarily, it's typing skill.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have been taught a way or you automatically do something, or I always write the T-E-H, it's like my fingers and my head don't work together. And so I know that I do that. But if someone doesn't know that they have that, it's not that they can't spell the, it's just that their hands do something different to their head. And it's just flagging those, like, if you're doing something in the future, just be aware that you might want to find that when you finish your document. Just do a search for it and see if it comes up, and then just whip it out before it goes to anyone else.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely.
Find your own little niggles.
Do you find that your friends are reluctant to send you anything written? You know, or even, you know, business people. I mean, I'm not even a proofreader. And people tell me they've rewritten stuff four times before they've sent it to me in case I judge them. I don't know why I'm giving off. I'm some kind of judgy person.
Such a dick. No, I do get that. They're like, oh, I've sent you a thing, but, you know, you don't have to read it for anything. I just want to, you know, just, you need to know this, or can you just check for something, or don't read it for proofreading, it's just for your information.
And they think that you're being, you know...
And I'm not judging them, because I make typos because I am human, like everyone does. It's not that I'm trying to be iffy, it's that I have a skill and sometimes I think I can help people and then people pay for me to help them and that's great. It doesn't mean I'm doing it all the time, except when I'm in pubs. And men, you're having a pint and you're sat there having a lovely time and then you think, oh, I'll just see if they've got any baked camembert. And then you realise you can't afford it. And there's random capitalisations and ampersands, but then ands. And I'm like, oh, it's in your menu and someone wrote it and it's fine and the people in the kitchen have got that skill to cook the food. But what? Someone could have just checked it, because I'm having a pint now and I'm annoyed by those ampersands. I don't mind which way you go, but just do one or the other. But it can't just be me that sees all this. There must be other people out there. So I kind of feel like, as a proofreader, I'm actually just removing all those niggly things that bug people in day-to-day life so we can just sit there and have a nice pint. Mm. That's my job.
I was reading a leaflet from a national bank the other day, because my kids are looking at opening bank accounts. Oh. And they kind of got all this stuff. And I'm looking at it. And like one of the big five banks has apostrophe errors.
Ooh.
In its stuff.
That's awkward.
Kind of sad, right?
Yeah. Like, you can't really write to them and tell them, though, can you? Also, that's not cool either.
But like, but banks, it's like you kind of want their attention to detail to be on point.
You
want to
know that if they can, like, get their apostrophes right, they can get where their decimal point is.
As long as their decimal point is wrong in my favour, then I'm all right with that. I don't know. You roll the dice there, you know.
It's true, though.
It could go one of two ways.
And even though we all know people are human and that everyone makes mistakes and typing is hard, there's lots of fingers and keys everywhere. That even though you know all that, as soon as you see an error, you do question. Like a company, especially when it's a company or a brand, you do question their attention to detail. And I do it. And then I'm like, no, Lorraine, but they're human, it's fine. And then I'm like, oh, no, but they could have had it checked and it would have been helpful to them. Because if I'm thinking it, other people are thinking it. Mm. Do we sound like bad people?
Yeah, well, you do.
Damn it. You lured me down this path.
I know I did skillfully come down the path. Right, so you have the ear of a certain number of writers and marketers right at this moment.
Eek.
What do you want us to do differently to make your life better?
I don't really think there is anything. Because when I get work through from those kind of clients and agencies, it is pretty on point. It's more that kind of last line of defence of catching the little niggly things that as a writer you probably wouldn't have noticed because you've been in that big headspace of creativity and boiling it down and making it into an important message. So there isn't really anything. A clear brief is really helpful, but then it's...
A clear brief as to what we are looking for.
Yes.
From you.
Yes, so...
How much we want you to get involved in the text or not.
Yes, so I will... When someone comes to me, I'll always say, looks like you need this, you've asked for this, this is how they break down, which exactly is it you want?
Yeah, so know. You've asked for a light
copy,
you know, a light proofread, and actually what you need is set the whole thing on fire and start again.
And I don't rewrite. People often like, oh, well, you do words, you can write this. I was like, I don't write. Oh, but you should maybe offer copywriting as a service. And I was like, there are people with that skill, there are yous in this world, and I have my end of the process and you have the beginning of the process, and I'm happy there. It's my favourite bit.
So, I mean, the thing that I hate is when I'm writing my own stuff and I'm publishing it, because as you say, I have blind spots and I can't see things. And same as we're talking about with the banks, right? If I make mistakes in the stuff that I publish, I know I'm going to get judged. I know people are going, well, I'm not going to use their copywriting services because he did a typo. He left the word out. It's always the word two. I don't know why.
At least, it's better than spelling it wrong.
Yeah. So is that like to the nth degree for you? Do you have to like check your stuff like a million times? Or is it something where it's the amount of it's not the number of times that you check it? Are you like really paranoid about your stuff?
My eyes rolled when you asked that. I was like, yeah, it's awful. Because I want it to be right because that's what I want. And I want it to be clear for everyone to read. And I want it to be perfect. And I've mentioned before, I am human and there will be typos and I don't want there to be. And so I'm really, really mindful of how I proofread my own. I have, because when I proofread, I do it syllable by syllable. And when I do my own, I have to really slow it down, because when anyone's written their own stuff, they know what's coming. They understand the emotion that they've created in that sentence. They've gone through so many revisions. They know what it means just by knowing it was the third line down. Like, you don't really need to read the words. So to read my own, I have to properly go duh, 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 through all the syllables, because I'll miss something.
So, I mean, are there tricks to that? Are there things that, you know, as our listeners, you know, obviously will need to proof their own. Obviously, everyone should send all their stuff to you. But
that's not real life.
But not everybody can do that.
So that's fine.
So what can we do in our day to day that means that less of that stuff will sneak through? What have you got any tips for us?
I do. And the first one is time, but it's also probably the least practical.
Yeah.
Because deadlines. But if you can write something and then leave it, even if it's for like an hour before you go back to it, or just do something different, get away from your desk, anything, you'll have a slightly different headspace, so you won't still be in that zone. So just, if you can leave it a whole day, that'd be amazing, because you will definitely spot things. That's the biggest one. And then the next one is slowing it down. It is really hard to read slowly, and I've got quite the knack now for doing the syllable by syllable. But if you can focus on each word individually rather than just reading the sentence, because you won't spot it, you have to properly look. Because there are always all the little ones which are like, say you finish a line ends in and, but then and is on the beginning of the next line, and you won't notice that. So if you're doing it letter by letter, or word by word even, you'll probably pick up those things. So it really is slowing it down. The next is, if you have little things you always do, like my te for the, just search for them. Just look for them. Or if you think, I've got a feeling I did realise with a Z somewhere, just do a find and replace for it, because you can find those things quite easily just by, you know, a few little clicks. Another one, double spaces. Because you can just find a double space. You just open up the find thing, go space, space, and then it will find them for you. So that's always handy. And there's actually a lady, she is a fiction proofreader, copy editor, called Louise Harnby, and she's got a website that is for her clients, but she's also got a tab that is like resources for writers and editors.
Oh, cool.
And she's got a cool document that she's written on tricks for using like the find and replace functions and looking for wildcards, that if you follow this guide, you can basically do the basics of some proofreading before you even sent it to anyone. You can find all those little niggly things yourself. It's a big document, but a really useful document, and anyone can just download that.
Oh, amazing. We'll definitely put a link to that in
the
show notes.
I really like her. So why not?
Cool. Thank you so much for finding the time to come and talk to us. That is genuinely amazing.
Sorry, it's because I've got no friends, remember, and so it's... I got the time.
The spreadsheets are your friends.
I know, they are.
That's okay. You could be our friend. You can be a friend of the show.
Oh, thank you. And I can tell you all about the conditional formatting that I've been playing with.
Oh, we look forward to that. Let's just do that another time. Absolutely. Come back and talk to us again about conditional formatting.
There are probably people with real skills you could gain for that. I just like a brightly coloured spreadsheet.
Thanks again to Lorraine for coming in and spending some time with us. Wasn't she brilliant?
She was, wasn't she? Very good value.
Absolutely.
Yes, Lorraine, come back again on the next podcast.
Absolutely, yes. A future podcast, a future podcast regular, I reckon.
Definitely.
One of the things that Lorraine was talking about, you know, was that moment where, you know, she gave her friends kind of feedback that they weren't particularly looking for. Yes. And people didn't take that feedback particularly kindly. Now, I know that you do regular training here on how to take feedback well, how to handle it constructively. What made you decide that was a thing that was important to do here? Were we all having a lot of hissy fits in the office?
Well, no, we weren't having hissy fits. But I think, you know, lots of writers are quite sensitive types, myself included. So I'm definitely the sort of person that could benefit from this sort of training. But it's just, you know, you kind of put yourself out there with your writing, mm-hmm. and you never know quite what the client's going to respond with. You hope they're going to like it. You've put a lot of time and thought and effort into it, and sometimes when you get feedback that is less than glowing, it's not a very nice experience, and it can be something that is really quite upsetting and that you can dwell on for quite a long time. So the aim of the training that we do here is to let our writers know that, you know, they're not alone going through these feelings. But also it's to give them the kind of skills to get past that initial, the initial feelings of sort of shame and like lack of self-worth and I'm no good as a writer and all of that, and move on to something more constructive.
Like anger.
Yes, anger is one of them as well. In fact, I've got I thought I'd identified a sort of 7-step process that you go through, like a 7-step sort of emotional journey.
Like the stages of grief.
Very like the stages of grief. Some of them are the same as the stages of grief.
Wow.
It turns out that not everyone goes through the same emotional journey when they get bad feedback. So whereas I might start off with like terrible pain and shame and embarrassment, our colleague Matt, for example, goes straight to righteous fury, extreme anger.
Hurling an expletive across the office, as you've probably noticed.
Yes, yeah. Whereas it takes me, I think, 3 stages to get to anger. So there we are. Everybody's a bit different, but I think, you know, everyone goes through something similar.
So what are your sort of first 3 stages before you get to anger?
Well, it's just the awful, it's just like a sort of wounding pain to begin with. It's like, oh no, this is awful. You know, when you open the thing up and you see all this like red underlining and all these comments, you're just like, oh no, this is the worst. And then, you know, I've had times when other people have been copied. So, you know, when colleagues are copied, you know, you just feel really embarrassed. It's like, oh no, this is terrible. And then self-doubt. It's like, well, obviously I'm not a very good writer, you know, and this is the only thing I can do. So I have no plan B for my career. So this is, you know, quite depressing. And then for me, it's anger. You know, once you kind of start looking at the comments, you get really angry, really defensive of your work. It's like, well, they haven't understood what I was trying to say, and they're stupid and they don't understand what I was doing here.
That's a feeling I can recognise. Yes, absolutely. So in those early stages, what are the most kind of constructive things you can do when you're experiencing those negative emotions?
Yeah, well,
how do you deal with them?
The least constructive thing you can do is email your client back in your righteous fury or in your very defensive, I was trying to do this and you haven't understood me. So don't respond in those kind of first emotional stages. Maybe just sort of walk away from your desk, have a cup of tea, or, you know, talk to somebody else about the feedback that you've got, but don't start trying to justify yourself or go back while you're still upset or angry.
And are there tips to sort of help you believe in yourself if you're feeling somewhat undermined?
Well, actually, I think one of our account managers here, Sarah, did a really nice thing for us all, which is she compiled a book for each of us of all the really nice feedback and positive feedback that we'd had from clients. So each of us has on our desks a book of positive feedback that we can look in whenever we're feeling a little bit, I'm a terrible writer. You can look at all the nice things that clients have said in the past. So I think that might be something that works for other writers as well. Like, collate all your positive feedback in a place where you can refer back to it, make yourself feel good again.
And I think that the opinion, you know, the memory that you had with the all the red underlines came back, I think is something that our listeners probably experience as well. Went out on Twitter and asked people for, you know, the most unusual feedback they'd received. And I know that that Laura Sutton, you know, friend of the show, Laura Sutton. Hi Laura. Laura. She said, "I simply got my copy back, almost entirely rewritten by the client who wasn't a native English speaker. The amended version didn't even make sense."
Yes, it sounds familiar.
We've all been there,
yeah.
So after anger and you kind of calmed down, then what?
Well, then it's time to actually look at what the feedback actually says. And so this is the point at which you start to think, oh, okay, yeah, that makes sense. And, you know, that's not, I can see what they mean by that and I can see how I could have phrased that better. But there's still maybe things that don't make sense. I mean, one of the things that we train our writer to look out for is good and bad givers of feedback. So some clients are really, really good at giving constructive feedback, you know, very clear about why that's not working for them, sometimes suggest like alternative ways of approaching it. And others are not so good. And you've probably had some of these when you were asking on Twitter for bad experiences. But, you know, sometimes you just get back, no, or don't like this, or just delete. Or what were you thinking? or you know, I've had lame.
I had one the other day. I would never start I'd never start a paragraph with "and" under any circumstances.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And it was just like, yeah, that's why I'm the writer and you're not.
Yeah,
I didn't say that. I kind of wanted to.
Lots of people think back to what they learned at school and think that that is actually the way that you should write in every circumstance.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. So yes, I mean, if you're lucky, you've got constructive feedback and you can go through and you can make the changes that make sense. And if anything that doesn't make sense, you can, and this is what we always recommend people do, is like pick up the phone and talk to the client, you know, just ask them to talk you through their feedback. If it's not clear, you know, what did they mean? And that's there's an extra bonus with that, is that often if you pick up the phone, you'll find these people are very nice to you.
they're feeling quite sorry. Yes. for what they've said.
Yes, it's that thing of, you know, when people are writing feedback on a document, they're not really thinking about the person at the other end, so it can feel like an attack. Whereas if you've got them on the phone, you know, they recognise that they're talking to somebody and they're often much nicer than they are in their written feedback.
I remember Steve in the office was telling me that he had a client that was that had commented made an amend early on in the piece, and it was about a particular spelling of a company name or something, but obviously it was something that Steve was not aware of at the time and so continued to make the mistake. Yes. Regularly. And it was picked out every time and they got more and more irate, and it's like, I've told you about this.
I thought I told you before.
It's like, I'd already written it. and as they went on through the piece, the feedback just got more and more vicious and violent.
Yeah.
It was,
yeah,
like, he's not seen your feedback
yet. Yeah, yes, that is unfortunate. And I think you kind of, you know, as writers, we have to spare a thought for the client who's reviewing. And often they don't enjoy the review process. And often if they're not able to articulate why they don't like something, they can get very frustrated because they can't tell you what's wrong with it. They just feel like there's something wrong here. They can't articulate it. And so that frustration comes through. And sometimes we take that very personally as a personal attack on us when it's not intended to be at all.
No, I think that's a really good point, because for us, you know, when we're reviewing internally here, reviewing the other writer's work,
yeah,
it takes a long time to get to that place where you are able to give objective, constructive feedback on someone's writing. I mean, you know, we have the hierarchy that we use and things like that. But it's not a thing you can just do. I mean, it's a thing that we all had to learn.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, some of us learned it better than others. I still don't think I'm very good at it. Still, my temptation is just to rewrite things the way I would have written it, which is often what you find with clients as well.
Yeah.
But we kind of train ourselves to, every time we change something, we have to put a comment to say why we've changed it. And if we can't think of a reason why we've changed it, then leave it, because all you're doing there is rewriting it the way you would have written it.
Absolutely. We'll say hi to Irene Trindle as well.
Hi, Irene.
Who was recently on the podcast, of course. She got some feedback that says, on a CTA that said, let's talk, the client put, need to check with legal if we can say this.
Oh, I love it.
Which is just...
We wouldn't want to be talking to our customers.
Nobody who's written in B2B for any length of time would be remotely surprised by that comment.
Legal look at that and go, oh, for God's sake, just let that go.
But they don't go, oh, no.
Oh, it's, I suppose it depends what kind of legal department you've got.
What about people who want to email us? Want to make sure that we're being inclusive of people that can't talk.
Oh, I don't know. I always get the sense that legal kind of roll their eyes at marketing people and go, it's just marketing. Say what you want. Within reason.
You might well be right. So are there any other patterns, opportunities or warning signs that people should look out for when they're checking their client feedback?
Patterns is definitely a thing to look for. So if over time you're getting the same sort of feedback... then that's something that kind of suggests there's something that you need to fix in your writing. So, you know, if you're constantly getting feedback on, you know, this isn't the right tone of voice, or, you know, this isn't pitched right for this audience, or this isn't what this product does, then you need to go back and really start thinking about, you know, the persona that you're writing for. You know, have you got enough knowledge to write to them at their level? Do you know enough about the product to be able to write authoritatively and accurately about it? So if you see the same thing occurring again and again, there's something there that you need to fix in your writing. There's also, and this is one of the things that I guess we kind of try to instill in our writers as well, is that you can turn around a bad relationship, or what might seem like a bad relationship, or you can turn around an unhappy client. So it's actually a good opportunity. You know, if you've got some what you consider to be negative feedback, that is a good opportunity to get on the phone with your client and start, well, addressing the feedback, also building that rapport with your client. And, you know, you can build sort of very good long-lasting relationships like that.
Absolutely. And I think that, you know, that's also, it's part of managing client expectations, isn't it? That sometimes, you know, we allow amends as part of a project quote for a reason, because sometimes you're not always going to hit it straight out of the gate, you know, and sometimes, you know, you do need to do that refinement. And I think that as long as they see that you're comfortable receiving feedback from them, I think that makes such a big difference. If you're not shaken when they've given you feedback, then they see that this is a project and you're working together towards a result, rather than they're somehow undermining their confidence in your ability as a writer, which is not what it's about.
And I think, like I said before, it's an uncomfortable experience for them, and you can make it an easier experience for them to give you feedback if you kind of have that collaborative approach. And, you know, if instead of getting on the call and being all defensive, like, I mean, if you're just like, well, talk me through, you know, why isn't this quite right? And then if you sort of make some suggestions on the call and work collaboratively with them like that, then they feel much better, and they become more confident reviewers in future as well, which is great. It's a win-win.
Yeah, it's good for everybody.
Yeah.
So if the listener wants to look at the stages and how they might react in more detail, is there any way we can help them with that?
Yes, I've got a handy table. So I think we can probably put it as an image in the blog post that goes with the podcast.
Yeah, I expect so.
It's just a handy table of, you know, here are the seven stages of the emotional journey that you might go through. Here's how to react at each stage. And here are sort of things to look out for and ways you can improve your writing, but also help improve the way your client reviews your writing.
Brilliant. That's definitely worth a look. Thank you. Well, we are, unbelievably, almost out of time already. But before we go, it's time to hear about Katie's nomination for the B2B Content Hall of Fame. So I am joined by Katie, who has nominated this month's inductee for the Radix B2B Content Hall of Fame. And it is Drawbotics. And specifically, there you have to help me out with the title of the blog post.
I'm probably going to mangle it, but okay. It's seven of your favourite TV offices brought to life in 3D floor plans.
Oh, it's so good. It's so good.
It really scratches a lot of itches for me.
Absolutely. So what is it about that particularly appealed to you as B2B content?
So I'm going to get the nerdy bit out of the way to start with. It really appeals to me on two of my favourite things to do with my weekend, which is procrastinate by watching loads of TV and procrastinate by playing The Sims for hours and hours at a time. And I think the thing I really enjoyed about these floor plans is there's just such a minute level of detail they have gone into, and they have put like 200 hours into just the modelling and like who knows how many into the watching of television.
So they've basically they've demonstrated their spatial modelling architectural sort of software stuff by drawing sets from from TV series, right?
Parks and Recreation, Mad Men, Silicon Valley, that kind of thing.
Wow.
And I have like a minor bone to pick with how marketers use popular culture.
I find it
deeply embarrassing most of the time. But I think this is really nice because it's just a bit of fun and it's not shoving it down your throat that it's like, look, we are so down with the kids. It's just, here's a thing we enjoy. Here's something we've spent loads of time doing for you to enjoy. Oh, by the way, look how cool our product is. And it's really cool. I don't even have anything to model and I sort of want to pay them to just like make my house.
Yeah. And the more you, with this, that level of detail and the Easter eggs in it, so the more you engage with it, the more it rewards you.
Yeah. Yeah. I think if you don't watch a show, you can sort of look at it and be like, huh, that's neat. There's like cool stuff going on here. But for like the stuff that I've watched really closely, so like I've watched a lot of Brooklyn Nine-Nine, watched a lot of Suits in my time, regrettably, like you can look and you can see things that only you recognize from like binging it yourself, so that's really nice. And it's like, it's so shareable, like it's just, it's free viral marketing basically, because everyone is just gonna be like, look at this cool thing I found.
Absolutely. And it's one of those things, isn't it, where the more effort you put in, it really translates into that content that's not just a bit better than everyone else's content, but it's just so much better because it's so creative and they've worked so hard at it. It's fabulous. Well, thank you for the nomination, Katie. I am more than happy to induct Drawbotics into the Radix B2B Content Hall of Fame.
Yay, thank you.
Oh, thanks, Katie. That is a cracking nomination. And that is, unbelievably, the end for another month. Next month's Good Copy, Bad Copy is one that I am really looking forward to. Actually, I think it's going to be a particularly special one. Fiona, you're doing a special report on comedy in B2B content.
Yes, because this is something that a lot of people say you should never mix. Comedy and B2B content, especially if you're writing for international audiences where the comedy might not translate. But is that actually true? So I'm going to be talking to three people who work in B2B marketing but also have a sort of comedy career as well, to get their views on, you know, whether you can actually use comedy and if so, how.
Oh, that is brilliant. I look forward to it. However, listener, if you can't wait till then, I do have a special announcement for you. We've actually just launched a second podcast series, the B2B Content Audio Blog. It's a very different approach from this podcast. It's short, it's weekly, and the idea that it's just an easy, interesting listen if you want something to go to sleep to, or you're on your commute, or you're out for a run or something. And the idea is that it's like reading a blog, but it's for your ears. We're just piloting the idea at this stage with this first series. So if you'd like to have a listen and give us any feedback, we'd really like to hear it. If you want to contact us about that podcast, this podcast, or your thoughts on B2B comedy, then please do email us at podcast@radix-communications.com. If you really want to cause a stir in the office, email us a voice memo. I understand it will make Jordan do the robot. You can also find us on Twitter at RadixCom, RadixCom. And you'll find our website at radix-communications.com, where you can sign up for our monthly copywriting tip sheet, you know, if you want to. Until next time, tinkety-tonk, old fruit, and down with the present participle.
Quite.